Some of the best things in life stretch us. They push us just a little bit farther. They introduce us to possibilities we'd never considered, people we didn't know that we needed, and parts of ourselves we might never have discovered otherwise. Think about the people who have stretched your life simply by becoming part of it. A friendship that begins and suddenly you care about things that you'd never thought about before. Or a family has a child enter their life, and somehow there's room for a whole new person with all their needs and hopes and noise and stuff, and we grow with that. We travel somewhere unfamiliar, and we discover that we've found new ways of doing things that we didn't even know existed, and that our ways of doing things are not the only way to do them. We can learn another language, and we find ourselves not merely learning new words, but learning new ways of expressing ideas that we thought we already understood, but have grown to understand in different ways. We stretch in these kinds of ways and in these kinds of moments, and our world gets bigger. Sometimes we even seek that stretching out. We take a class because we want to learn something new, or we pick up a hobby that we aren't particularly good at yet, or we sit across a table from someone whose experience of the world is different from our own. There's just something exhilarating about reaching the edge of what we already know and discovering that we are capable of just a little more than we imagined. Of course, not all stretching is something we choose. Sometimes a person or an experience simply enters our lives and asks more room of us than we think we can give. Suddenly the world is a little bigger than the map that we had drawn for it, and in those moments we discover that we don't always want to stretch with the world around us. Matthew gives us one of those moments today. This is one of those parts of the Gospels that we know is there and we just hope doesn't show up on a Sunday reading. It's one of those moments that stretches us. Jesus and his disciples are about to encounter someone who does not fit comfortably within the world that they know. And before the encounter is over, they're going to discover that the mercy of God has more room to stretch than they ever imagined. The word of the Lord from Matthew chapter 15, verses 10 through 28. Then he called the crowd to him and said to them, "Listen and understand. It is not what goes into the mouth that defiles a person, but it is what comes out of the mouth that defiles." Then the disciples approached and said to him, "Do you know that the Pharisees took offense when they heard what you said?" He answered, "Every plant that my heavenly Father has not planted will be uprooted. Let them be alone. They are blind guides of the blind. And if one blind person guides another, both will fall into a pit." But Peter said to him, "Explain this parable to us." And then he said, "Are you still also without understanding? Do you not see that whatever goes into the mouth enters the stomach and goes out into the sewer? But what comes out of the mouth proceeds from the heart. That is what defiles. For out of the heart come evil intentions, murder, adultery, sexual immorality, theft, false witness, slander. These are what defile a person. But to eat with unwashed hands does not defile." Jesus left that place and went away to the district of Tyre and Sidon. And just then, a Canaanite woman from that region came out and started shouting, "Have mercy on me, Lord, Son of David. My daughter is tormented by a demon." But he did not answer her at all. And his disciples came and urged him, saying, "Send her away. She just keeps shouting after us." And so he answered, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." But she came and knelt before him, saying, "Lord, help me." So he answered, "It is not fair to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs." And she said, "Yes, Lord. Yet even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table." And then Jesus answered her, "Woman, great is your faith. Let it be done for you as you wish. And her daughter was healed from that moment. Matthew does something incredibly important with this reading. It asks us to hold two scenes together that we might otherwise read separately. If today's sermon was just the parable, we'd all be happier. And if we could just pretend that this whole interaction with this woman never existed in the Gospels, we'd all be happier because we hate this story because it makes Jesus feel intolerable. His intolerance makes him feel intolerable. And Matthew refuses to let us ignore it. So he puts these two stories right next to each other so that one can inform the other. Before Jesus ever meets this Canaanite woman, he has been talking with the disciples about what makes someone clean or unclean. They live in a world where those distinctions matter, where there are ways of identifying what belongs and what does not. But Jesus tells them to look deeper. What enters a person from the outside is not what ultimately reveals who they are. He wants them to learn how to pay attention to what comes from within the heart. What does the heart produce? Stop worrying about what you put into your stomachs and start worrying about what comes out of your heart. And then Matthew deliberately takes us somewhere unexpected. We leave familiar territory and enter the region of Tyre and Sidon. Tyre and Sidon are historically the places where you don't want to go. It's the part of town where nobody wants to go. It's biblically, Tyre and Sidon are known to make Sodom and Gomorrah look nice. Tyre and Sidon is where the worst of the worst live. Pick your borough, pick your neighborhood, pick your ward. This is the place that has the reputation of you don't want to buy a house there. You don't want to send your kids to school there. You don't want to live there. This is not where you want to go. Jesus tells the disciples, what comes from the heart matters more than what goes into the mouth. And then he takes them to a place to show them, to teach them, to give them an opportunity to challenge heart. Almost immediately, we hear someone shouting behind us. Matthew calls her a Canaanite. That's not a modern term in the first century. There are not people going around saying, I'm a Canaanite. He picks the Old Testament word that's thousands of years old. It's full of this history. He reaches back into Israel's history for a name that's heavy with connotation. He picks a name for this woman which is full of generations of separation. For millennia, Canaanite has meant the absolute farthest reach of other. There is no other word Matthew could have picked to make this woman feel more distant. This is a Canaanite woman. She is not one of us, and she just won't leave us alone. She just keeps following. Have mercy on me, Lord, Son of David. She just won't stop shouting. We keep walking because that's what you do. You keep driving past the person with the sign. You don't listen to them shout louder. You don't want them to follow you out of the intersection to the next intersection. What if the person on the corner followed you to every intersection as you stopped at every red light? Would you not, at the end of that drive, eventually just turn to somebody and say, would you please make them go away? She won't leave them. She doesn't stay at her intersection. She travels with them, and she just won't quit. And Jesus isn't helping. He says nothing. Doesn't tell her to be quiet. Doesn't tell her to go away. So eventually, they've heard enough, and they look at Jesus, and they tell him, send her away. There are boundaries here, and everybody knows where they are. Jesus himself names them. I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. But she just keeps coming. She kneels before him. She's not behind him anymore. She gets in front of him. She stops him. She blocks his way. She kneels in front of him and says, just as simply as possible, help me. There's no more ignoring this Canaanite woman. Even when Jesus speaks of children gathered around a table and bread that does not belong to the dogs, she doesn't move. She stares him right in the eye. and says, "Yes, Lord, yet even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from the table." We want more than anything to rush past this story. We don't want to linger in this moment. It's uncomfortable. It's awkward. We all know what this feels like, to try to ignore somebody that cannot be ignored. We want to rush past these uncomfortable words. We want to get to the healing at the end of the story, but this woman refuses to let us rush past her. She remains there, still believing that the one standing before her is the one to whom she cries for mercy. And it's in that moment that we have to realize that the first half of the reading matters enormously. Jesus has just taught the disciples to pay attention not to what's on the outside, but what comes out of a heart. So listen to what has been coming from this woman's heart. Ignore the Canaanite label. Ignore where she's from. Ignore what she looks like. Ignore who she is. And if you pay attention to what comes out of her heart, it's Lord. It's Son of David. It's have mercy. Help me. Even when every boundary seems to leave no place for her, she remains convinced that there is enough in Christ for her daughter. The disciples see a Canaanite woman. They see someone outside the boundaries, someone who can be sent away and ignored. But Jesus sees what comes from her heart, and he gives it a name. Not her. He doesn't give her a name. He gives what's coming from her heart a name, and he looks at her and says, "Woman, great is your faith." He doesn't see a Canaanite woman. He doesn't see a woman. He sees faith. There it is, faith. In a place where no one expected to find it. In the person everyone had already written off, beyond the line that seemed to tell them where faith belonged and where mercy ought to go. And now the story stretches, because Christ has found faith on the other side of the boundary. And anywhere Christ finds faith, he always meets it with mercy. Jesus does not simply recognize this woman's faith and admire it from a distance. He allows mercy to stretch toward the faith he has found. And Matthew tells us that her daughter is healed from that very moment. That isn't how we always choose mercy to behave. We draw lines around mercy. We can imagine mercy for some people, but perhaps not for others. We decide who gets it and who doesn't. Mercy after this failure, but surely not after that one. Mercy for people whose stories make sense to us, whose choices we understand, whose lives fit somehow within the world as we learn to see it. Even mercy can become something that we guard, as though if we extend it too far, we might run out, as if mercy is some non-renewable resource. But Christ does not allow the boundaries that we draw around mercy to determine where it can and cannot go. He stretches those boundaries. When he finds faith on the other side of the line, he stretches mercy toward it. And in doing so, he stretches everyone standing there with him. The disciples, they begin this encounter saying, "Send her away." But now they stand beside Jesus as he looks at the very woman that they want gone and declares that she has great faith. Which implies what? I really want to know who he's looking at when he delivers that line. Like, this is one of those director moments in the director's cuts where I need the commentary. I really need to know. I kind of hope he's looking at the disciples when he says, "Woman, great is your faith." Because the implication is that theirs isn't as good as hers in that moment. And he can flip that table on them instantly and say that this, you think you're better than she is. She has great faith. That's, even if he's not looking at them, that has to be how they feel in this moment. There has to be this understanding that she has faith where they didn't. That has to come with some sense of holy shame. They're challenged in this moment. And what has changed is what the disciples have now been forced to see. Whether they like it or not, they have to see the world differently. This stretching of mercy does not begin in Tyre and Sidon. Long before this encounter, Isaiah started stretching the people of Israel this direction. Isaiah imagined a day when the foreigners who join themselves to the Lord would be brought to God's holy mountain. These are people who stand beyond Israel's familiar boundaries. And yet God was already saying all the way back then that my house shall be called a house of prayer for all peoples. Isaiah pushes that vision even further. The God who gathers the outcast of Israel declares, I will gather others to them besides those who have already gathered. It's this never-ending increase of gathering more and more and more. Whenever you decide this is too much, when the fire marshal says you're past occupancy, God gathers a few more and stretches just a little more. This is a remarkable picture of how God operates. He gathers Israel first, yes, but he doesn't stop there. He keeps gathering. He makes room, and then he makes more room. The mercy that's extended to those beyond the boundary does not require the people that are already inside to be pushed away. God does not make room for one more by making less room for another. His mercy stretches and never becomes scarce. And that is what the disciples are witnessing in this moment with Jesus. The mission to Israel has not suddenly become meaningless. The children have not been removed from the table. They're not going hungry so the dogs under the table can eat. But standing before them is a woman whose heart is full of faith. And quite simply, Christ refuses to let the boundary become the place where mercy stops. He stretches mercy toward her, and he invites everyone watching to stretch with him. Because faith and mercy do not find one another simply because we've arranged the world correctly. Faith and mercy often never quite reach one another. Christ has to hold them together. Christ recognizes faith where we might overlook it, and he carries mercy beyond the places where we might have stopped it. And he takes those two things and connects them where we would never. Again and again, Jesus stretches our vision until we can see what he sees, we can see the faith that he sees. And the Spirit keeps forming that kind of people, people who are willing to be stretched with the mercy of Christ. Not people who have surrendered every conviction or forgotten the story that formed them, but people who have learned that following Jesus sometimes means allowing him to make our world a little larger than it was before. And we discover that we can stretch without changing who we are. And that is something deeper than simply learning to be more inclusive. Inclusion can still leave us comfortably at the center, deciding who else we are willing to let in. We can remain the host. We can determine where the boundaries are. We decide how far to extend an invitation. But these disciples, they do not control this moment. They're not the ones who decided where to give mercy. They're not the one who recognized her faith. And they're certainly not the ones that extend the mercy toward her. Christ is already doing that. Their job is to learn to see what he sees and to stretch with him. And that requires humility. Because we don't always know where faith will appear. Sometimes it appears in the person whose theology is different from ours. Sometimes in the person whose life has taken a path that we don't understand. Sometimes in someone who speaks another language, comes from another culture, or carries a story that's so different than ours that we struggle to imagine if we have anything in common. And we can become so accustomed to looking at the things that distinguish us as different from one another that we fail to notice what Christ sees coming from the heart. That means the church should expect to be stretched. Sometimes Christ will recognize faith in someone that we have already categorized. And sometimes he will stretch mercy towards someone we had already dismissed. And sometimes we will discover that Christ has already crossed a line that we are still standing behind. And in those moments, the question is not whether Jesus will come back to the place where we are comfortable. The question is whether we are willing to stretch just a little further with him. That's the kind of people the Spirit is forming, a church that is secure enough in Christ to have its expectations enlarged, humble enough to recognize faith wherever Christ finds it, and courageous enough to follow his mercy farther than we might have carried it ourselves. We don't have to know beforehand where that mercy will lead us. We simply keep our eyes on Christ because he is the one who brings faith and mercy together. And wherever he does, we stretch with him. So we stretch. We stand, we sing, we step out from this place, and we move with him toward faith. We bring whatever faith we have with us, and for some of us, that faith may be confident and strong, and for others, it might be tired or questioning or wounded, and we move toward the place where Christ has promised to meet us with mercy. And as we move, you should look around. You should look at the people making this journey with you. Different ages, different languages, different cultures, different histories, different stories of how we come to faith, and different experiences of what faith has required of us. And we might have all drawn those lines differently. We might have imagined a different collection of people around a table like this one. The good news is, not one of us decides who Christ gathers. Jesus does. And here at this table, there are no crumbs. Jesus gives us the bread, a cup, gives us himself, his body, his blood. And none of us stands at the edge, hoping that something might fall from the table. Christ has gathered us around it, and the mercy that stretched toward that Canaanite woman has now stretched toward us. And now, there's a place for each of us beside one another. We reach out our hands in faith, and Christ places mercy in them. We eat, we drink, we commune with Christ and with one another, and it's here at this table that Christ holds together what we could never bring together on our own. This table, this is where faith meets mercy. Let's stand and sing.